Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz, and I'm delighted to be here talking about food culture and commerce. Each week, Native highlights a U.S. or international city and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the gastronomic and economic virtues of a location. Today, we're going to Knoxville, Tennessee, and joining me is Jeff Ross, the garden manager of Blackberry Farm. And in the second half of the show, we'll be speaking with Dustin Busby of Century Harvest Farms. So welcome, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brianna. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So, Jeff, you are a son of Knoxville, correct?
I certainly am. I grew up right here in East Tennessee, right in Knoxville.
And you work for the celebrated Blackberry Farm, which is in the kind of rural outskirts, about 40 minutes down from downtown Knoxville.
That's right. We're in between Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. So we're in the foothills of the mountains.
So beautiful, the scenery. And I think I'm going to let you introduce Blackberry because I know they have such a wide breadth of operations. And then if you could speak a little bit about your role as the garden manager.
Well, you know, it's always hard to distill what we do at Blackberry and what Blackberry is into a short piece, but I'll try. We sit on about close to 5,000 acres of beautiful land in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains, and Blackberry Farm is a hotel, inn, resort, culinary destination, and working farm, plus about a million other things rolled into one. We've got incredible food, incredible people. We love to have folks come and stay with us. We do a number of activities from the culinary side all the way to the adventure and outdoor activities, all while relaxing in a charming and beautiful place in this part of the country.
Mm-hmm. And what's your day-to-day as the garden manager?
Well, I'm responsible for growing organic vegetables and fruits, providing them to the kitchen. I'm a demonstration chef, so we do cooking classes 5 days a week, and 2 days a week I lead guests through the garden. We pick, and then we cook often right out in the garden over an open fire, traditional Appalachian foods that, sort of elevated in the Blackberry Farm way. And we also have endeavored to grow our own French black truffles, which we're still awaiting for the first ones to happen. We keep a flock of sheep for milking to make cheese. Mm-hmm. We have chickens, ducks, pigs, you name it.
Wonderful. And I know that Knoxville is a very agricultural center. According to the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, there are about 912 farms that make up about 65,000 acres in the area. And I know that Blackberry has about approximately 300 employees with some seasonal variation. So on a micro level, how does Blackberry kind of fit into the wider landscape of the community? And then kind of zooming out a bit, how important is farming and food to the Knoxville area?
Well, I think Blackberry's role, you know, we're a big employer here in our county, which is a tremendous agricultural county. It's the county of Blount. And I believe Dustin, who you'll interview next, is in the same county. And, he represents a small farm as well. We're geared more toward, the resort hospitality side of it. But we do have about a 60-acre working farm as well. And we fit in a small way. And I think, when you mention the number of farms in the area, it comprises a lot of acreage, but I think a lot of those, of that 912 or whatever you said, I think a good majority of those, or a good many of those, are smaller farms, which is, you know, as we all know, that's, I think, the modern backbone of farming, as opposed to the much larger farms. But, you know, we have both here.
Mm-hmm. And if I were to come to Tennessee, what would I be eating right now? What are some special things to the area?
Oh, well, you know, the interesting thing about East Tennessee is that when you look at the Appalachian chain that runs, you know, if you think of the Appalachian Trail that runs from North Georgia all the way up to Maine, there's an incredible biodiversity of plants that are native here, and the epicenter, the eye of the storm, as it were, are right here in East Tennessee and Western North Carolina. And so we have the most diversity of any, just about any area on Earth as far as plants go. So there's tons of native plants, lots of mushrooms, lots of berries, lots of wild fruits, pawpaws, and things like that. But traditional foods in this area, you know, there's a lot of trout, you know, venison, pork has a great provenance here in this region. But as far as traditional or you know, foods in Knoxville that it's known for, you know, I think that comes from our influences. You know, we had a lot of Scots-Irish and some German and Swiss influence in this area in the early 1800s, and many of those foodways have still stuck around. One dish that speaks to me more than anything, I believe, is a dish that I love in the fall, and it's Metz and beans. So it's a Metwurst sausage, sort of a Bavarian-style bratwurst, but it could be made of any meat. And then, you know, we're in an area where green beans and pole beans and beans of all types it's a really great epicenter of that area for beans. And so it's a mixture of, you know, really delicious old-time beans, mm-hmm. and then a German-style sausage with kraut, which has a very interesting history in this area as well.
That sounds delicious. So you kind of touched on this, and I want to just go a little bit more in detail. You know, you're on the edge of the Great Smoky Mountains. What are your seasons like? Do you have four real seasons? Do you have like three seasons? Or, and I know I'm from the South, so we kind of have two. It's fall and then hot.
Right, that's true.
And how does weather play into what you grow, or it presents you with any challenges? Are there any pests that you have to manage?
Well, that's weather is everything. I mean, I think every gardener is an amateur meteorologist, an amateur entomologist, an amateur witch doctor, an amateur therapist. we get it all out in the garden, but the weather is definitely number one. You know, the weather tells us what to do. But we do have four distinct seasons, and it's interesting when you think of all the vegetables in a garden, anyone's garden in this part of the Middle South. Just about everything we grow is from somewhere else. You know, carrots from Afghanistan, and you know, corn from the Yucatan, and turnips from Europe and the Mediterranean. We have a time of the year when all of those can grow, and so, you know, we're Scotland in the winter, and we're Africa in the summer, and so we grow everything in that whole the whole gamut there.
And kind of the last question, kind of on this climate topic. I know when I look at a map of Knoxville, it's very apparent there's a lot of water around. I think there's like seven major lakes, and there's plenty of rivers. And I saw on the USDA's site that parts of Tennessee are listed as experiencing moderate drought conditions. And I just think, I know you know this is an issue that farmers are facing really worldwide. I was wondering, and thinking back of all your time spent in Knoxville, have you really seen water change in the area, or have you experienced any water stress? Is it something that you guys are kind of planning for?
I think it seems in the last, you know, I've been working with plants for a little over 20 years now, and, you know, just in that period of time, and even when I was a kid, it seemed like there weren't the extremes that there are now. You know, you'll have extreme drought, extreme cold, extreme hot, and plenty of rain. You know, like last year we were 24 inches above our normal rainfall. 2 years before that, we were at least that below it. So the extremes, I think, are what we've noticed more than anything. You know, there's a little anecdote. Chattanooga is about 90 miles sort of the southwest of us, and that was always kind of a line where you could grow certain things there that were too cold here to grow them, like fig trees and crepe myrtles and plants of that type. Well, you know, about 10 years ago, my friend's mother said, you know, let's face it, Jeff, we're the new Chattanooga, because we can now grow things that we couldn't grow before that weren't hardy. So, you know, it's clear that, water, climate, all those sorts of things have changed.
Mm-hmm. So I know that Knoxville is home to the University of Tennessee. Go Vols. Are you a Vol?
Well, I don't like to keep voles out of my garden. No, I'm a fall fan for sure.
And I know that they have a massive College of Agriculture and a very active research program. So I know that the university's presence is, of course, important to the local economy. But have you ever worked with the school in any projects, any partnerships, or?
Certainly. You know, the university has a great agriculture program, and, you know, like most schools in the South, you know, it was reliant on agriculture as far as, you know, getting people out into the working world. But in recent years, UT has developed an organic research farm. They've taken over an old conventional, I believe it was a cotton farm, and converted into organic vegetable production. And so it's a tremendous learning center for folks to come and see how, you know, people can switch from conventional to organic agriculture. And I've done lectures there and spent plenty of time there working with the directors and, you know, trying to further organic growing here in East Tennessee.
Are there any projects that have been fully completed that you've worked with them on that you could talk about at all? Anything you've seen that has made, like, a positive impact or...
I think more in the ornamental horticulture part of it. You know, there's been some disease-resistant varieties of native trees developed. They're working on, there's a tree, the eastern hemlock, which is a very important native tree, an ancient species of tree that lives here in the forest that's been devastated by an insect. And the UT is working very diligently and aggressively to help get rid of that pest, and I think they've made some strides toward that. But working on... disease-resistant tomato varieties, and again, you know, tomatoes are from, you know, they're not from here, they're from, you know, South America, Central America, Mexico, and, you know, in order for them to grow here, they have to deal with our humidity and our different type of heat than they have down there, and so there's varieties that are being developed for that.
That's great work. So one thing I want to look at is farmers markets. In the past 20 years, there's been about an addition of 7,000 farmers markets nationwide. And again, according to the USDA, Tennessee is listed as one of the top 10 states that has experienced growth in farmers markets. And in the last 5 years, Tennessee is one of only five states that has received increased investment to produce more farmers markets, to invest in current ones. And I think the governor of Tennessee as well has prioritized some funds through the Tennessee Agricultural Advancement Program. So how are you seeing this? Are you seeing this play out in Knoxville? Are farmers markets growing? Are there more of them? And what does it mean for connecting, you know, farmers to communities and communities to farmers?
Well, it's extremely evident in Knoxville. I mean, you can go to a market 6 days a week somewhere around the area. Some of the smallest towns have a beautiful farmers market. Our town right outside of Blackberry Farm is the town of Maryville, and that farmers market in the last 7 or 8 years has grown incredibly well, and it's a really amazing community, not only a community effort, but also a community meeting place. It kind of harkens back to the old days of people showing up on Saturday at the courthouse steps and just talking about their farms, and, you know, they're buying produce, and it's brisk business, and it's just really wonderful. But the Knoxville Farmers Market downtown, and that's where Dustin has a presence and a food truck there, it's almost like you've walked into the Union Square Green Market or the Ferry Building in San Francisco. I mean, it's really not much different. The accent's a little different, but that's about it. It's unbelievable how much traction that farmers markets have gotten in the area. And, you know, they can only help the community.
And are you seeing more farmers and more products, or just more customers?
Both. All three, actually. You know, There's the great thing about East Tennessee and the area around Knoxville, and even between Knoxville and Chattanooga, there's still an abundance of affordable land that young people can buy and start small farms, and that's happening. So mm-hmm. you're seeing a lot of groundswell from younger people wanting to get into farming, bringing things to the farmer's market. There's an outlet there without having to get on the commodity market and sell things for market price. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're selling it for what the, you know, their market will bear, and the customers have really bought into it. CSAs, of course, have, you know, community supported agriculture has gone through the roof here, and you know, even not just with vegetables, but with meat and milk and just about anything you can think of. There's tremendous amounts of, you know, craftsmanship and artisans who work in the area. Who've traditionally have made soap and baskets and art and sculpture and things of that nature, and there's now a market where they can get their craft out there.
Well, those all sound like very good things for the community, for the area, for the producers, and eventually for the customers. So, well, Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about Knoxville. Before we take a quick break, any final thoughts on the future of food and farming in the area? Where it's going?
Well, I mean, of course, it's not without its challenges, but it can't get anything but better. It's great now, but it's going to get better. I mean, there's immediate or incredible momentum from you know, people of all ages and all stripes, and you know, I think we're all a community. We're all an organism that, you know, can only help one another. And I love my city.
All right. Well, listeners, if you've never been to Blackberry Farm, go check out their website, blackberryfarm.com, to find out more and book your next trip, because it is not to be missed. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll be speaking with Dustin Busby of Blackberry Farm alum and chef and farm manager of Century Harvest Farms, and more about Knoxville.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
All right, welcome back. Dustin?
Yes, hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time out of your day. I know you are prepping for a big dinner tonight. So, full disclosure, everyone, Dustin and I went to high school together, so it's really special to have you joining us. It's been a while. So, Dustin, if you want to give kind of the rundown of your culinary history and fill us in on when you landed in Knoxville and kind of your experience in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. So I moved here in 2008 to start at Blackberry Farm. I had been working at other Relay Chateau properties, including the Woodlands Resort and Inn before that, which is in Somerville, South Carolina, where we grew up. And I had been very fortunate to travel a lot and go work at a lot of great restaurants. I worked at the French Laundry for a little while. I worked at the Fat Duck, Le Manoir over in England. So I was very fortunate to work at a lot of great restaurants, and then I came to Blackberry Farm, and I was the executive sous chef for over about 3 years there, and then I took over as their kind of farmstead manager eventually, doing jam, jellies, pickles, cheese making, livestock, and a little bit of everything.
And what are you up to these days?
So now, I guess about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago almost, that I left Blackberry and came here to Century Harvest Farms, where we have about 400 acres where we raise all pastured animals, including meat birds, chickens, and then we have eggs as well. We have about 250 head of grass-fed beef cattle, about 35-40 pigs, and we raise about 5 to 6 acres of not non-certified but organic vegetables.
Awesome.
We also
So, no worries. So since you landed there in 2008, have you really noticed kind of any growth in the area? I mean, it sounds like your farm's pretty big. Have you grown? I mean, have you always been around that same acreage or in same number of?
We have. My partner, Chris Berger, started this farm actually just with 35 acres about 6 or 7 years ago. And he and I met through BlackBerry. He actually came to sell us some vegetables, and he and I became good friends and started. I came to the farm to help just learn and just hang out. And then our families became friends, and we kind of moved on. And as the farm started expanding, he asked me to come on to help essentially add value to the crops and be able to help direct market and expand the farm. So before I came on, it was mostly just grass-fed beef. Did some vegetables, like I said, we got some at BlackBerry, but for the most part, it was just grass-fed beef. And then when I came on, we expanded to chickens and but more vegetables and pork.
You know, you're not from the area as our previous guest, Jeff, was, but what really made you fall in love with Knoxville? Like, what are you kind of, what's your favorite thing about the area?
I love the kind of diversity of it. It's very, there's almost a lot of, I almost say, like, microclimates here. Because of the mountains and just the lay of the land, there's so many different aspects. You can go travel 10 miles, and the soil and the kind of culture there is completely different. And it's really amazing. It's really fun. It's you know, the only thing the only thing we don't have is fresh seafood. which I do miss, but we have just amazing culture here. Like I said, of there's always something to be foraged. There's always some kind of mushroom growing or some kind of wild vegetable or leafy greens and stuff. And, there's a beautiful just array of different woods and, to use for smoking and cooking and everything. And it's really, there's always something. No matter when, there's always something new. There's always something exciting. And it's just a great place to be.
It sounds like a lot of possibilities for anyone who's interested in kind of taking up a project. So speaking of which, you do have another project, and I want to talk about that. Earlier this year, I read that the city of Knoxville announced a pilot program for food trucks,
mm-hmm.
and you are involved in one.
Yep.
So what is the name, and what's that all about?
We have a food truck called Hoof, H-O-O-F, and we sell mostly grass-fed burgers, and then we also use a lot of our other fresh ingredients that we have coming from the farm. So, 95% of the stuff that we comes from our farm, but salt, flour, and sugar, for the most part, is the only thing that we don't use from our farm. And it's a lot of fun. The pilot program is going well. We are actually not part of the pilot program right now. We're still kind of looking into it. We got the food truck to be able to do a lot of fun stuff here at the farm. And we do the farmer's market with our food truck right now, and we'll do some kind of festivals and everything like that. And the pilot program has been really great for Knoxville food trucks. There's a few other ones that are around here that have signed up for it and have done a really great thing with it. And so it's really awesome, but it's not, we got the food truck really as a great outlet for our farm and to showcase, and we really wanted to be able to do things out here in the country and bring people to our farm. We're very much driven to have our customers and our people come see what we're doing. We think that's the best thing is transparency, and we try and encourage people to come see where their food's grown and what they're buying, and that's part of the reason we got the food truck is just so we can essentially have a party and bring people out here and enjoy the fun and see the farm and see what we're doing.
So is that something you see growing in the area, this idea of food trucks? Because I know part of it's kind of like getting the kind of government side, the regulation and the health code all set up, and but so far it seems like it's going well, and it seems like a viable option for some other operators.
I think so. I think it was a little push from the brick and mortar restaurants when we first came on, and I think City of Knoxville was a little not confused, but really, really was trying to make everyone happy. They were trying to embrace food trucks, but also the brick and mortar restaurants. Were kind of really adamant on them not taking their business, essentially. And I think everyone kind of worked together, and I think overall it's going to be good. I think the pilot program has really, I think it's doing well. I think it still has some room to grow. I think some of the, you know, we have, I think of one in particular, which is Savory and Sweet, which is a food truck. And I think they were one of the first food trucks here in Knoxville, and they kind of always, they're very, very out there. They're very out there in the face of the public, and they always just do a superb job and just above, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of other things. And so I think they're really, you know, if you compare, I mean, as a standard in the food truck model, I would look to them. And so it's really a lot, like I said, it's really growing, and I think mm-hmm. People are really starting to embrace it, and it's going well.
Good. So another thing I kind of picked up on is the beer scene in Knoxville. I was like digging around a little bit, and I came across like no less than like 40 pubs and breweries. And I don't know, it just seems like there's a really robust beer scene there. Like, do you have any, I mean, besides drinking maybe some beers every now and then,
yeah.
Do you have any insights to kind of maybe what's going on in that space there?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, oddly enough, my partner who owns the farm is actually the partner in the local brewery here as well, which is Saltworks. And, and so we have a very good relationship with them. Our food truck actually lives at the brewery when it's not at the farm. And so we have a great relationship, not only from the beer, but we also take all the spent brewer's grain and we feed it to our pigs. We use it to make compost. And
interesting.
And so it's a great relationship of being able to do that. But the beer scene is growing in Knoxville. There's, I think, three or four breweries really trying to get on their feet and get going around here, and it's really exciting to see people to really support it, and I think we're going to see nothing but good things come from it.
Yeah, I just really get the sense that there's a lot of young people pushing there, whether they're opening, you know, starting food trucks, whether they're, you know, like yourself, I know you're in your late 20s, you know, managing a pretty large farm, or starting a brewery, or, you know, it just seems like a lot of younger folks just kind of doing lots of interesting things with food there.
Yeah, I think it really has, and it's kind of crazy to see almost the separation there's here in Knoxville. There's the what we call the baby boomers, you know, who have grown up, you know, grown to going to grocery stores and shopping that way, and then there's just this new kind of, you know, hip, if you will, younger crowd that just wants to kind of change and wants to see something different from Knoxville and wants to see where their food comes from, and they want to, you know, partake in making their own food and just seeing it, you know, all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really exciting because it's almost you can really feel the change. You can see the excitement. Our local farmers market here every Saturday, where we set up our food truck and everything as well, it's just, I mean, every week it gets, I swear, it gets bigger and bigger, and just the people are just excited, and you can just see the people's excitement when they're buying fresh produce or, you know, fresh meat and stuff. So it's really good to see.
And I kind of get that feeling from you and Jeff, our previous guest, just very optimistic. You have very excited about the area. And, you know, like you both kind of sound like you like what you see, what's going on there and what's happening. So that's great. I actually want to touch on something you said, the spent grains from the brewery to the farm. You just saying that made me just think of something. There's, I don't know, maybe you're not familiar, maybe you are, with there's a current, I guess, act in the FDA right now for the Food Safety and Modernization Act that would kind of restrict that transaction of spent grains from a brewery going to a farm.
Right.
Like, if that passed, how would that affect your farming operations?
So I think that's already been struck down, honestly.
Okay.
The last
I know
heard,
in March but, the space for comment was closed, but I wasn't sure if it had actually, like, finished.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, you may be right. I remember seeing it came up, and then I kind of went away pretty quickly. But they were talking about it, and it was kind of strange and out of the blue. I think it's more the way that it's being handled that they were worried about. And I know way back when kind of the whole pasteurization of raw milk started from distilleries and breweries feeding tainted brewer's grain to cattle, and then the milk being tainted after that. And so I wonder if that's something that they worry about, and, you know, if they're just trying to control it. But you know, we you know, we have a very good relationship, a very good program of using spent brewer's grain, and so we, I don't know, it's a tough thing, you know, I don't ever, you know, I respect the system of what, you know, of trying to protect the thing. I think they're sometimes very overcautious, mm-hmm. and, you know, but,
well, I just think of all that, kind of volume of spent grain that you're feeding or using as any kind of fertilizer sorts. And if you didn't have access to that, how expensive it would be to actually have to purchase it if it was regulated.
That's a good question. And we use about, so the brewery we're partners with is, they brew 3 times a week, and every time it's about 2 tons of spent mm-hmm. brewer's grain. So, that's 6 tons a week. And, that's a lot of biomass. And mm-hmm. As far as feed goes, we spread it on our pastures using like a compost spreader and let our chickens naturally kind of scrape it, you know, go through the pastures and eat it up. And, mm-hmm. And whatever doesn't dries out in the sun and goes into carbon as into our soil. It would be kind of a shot or a kind of a hit if we didn't have it. And I feel like it would be a little bit of a disservice because mm-hmm. it's such a wonderful loop from, you know, farm to brewery back yeah. to farm. And so, if they do make the decision, I hope it's a very informed one.
Fair enough. Well, Dustin, thank you so much for talking to us. Hopefully I can see you again soon. And such a treat to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I just want to end by just throwing out some fun facts about Knoxville. The city was named after Henry Knox, the first U.S. Secretary of War, who served in 1785. This year, CNN Money ranked Knoxville as one of the 7 most affordable travel destinations in the U.S. and one of America's fastest growing cities for job growth. You, as Jeff said, you are located near the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which is the most visited national park in America. And lastly, the city is hometown to Quentin Tarantino and, of course, Johnny Knoxville. That's all for this week. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz, and you are listening to Native on Heritage Radio Network. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.